Okay, we are in our third class here out of four together, examining individuals mostly in the Old Testament. I think we are going to venture into the New Testament in our last class together next week. For those who have not been here, we are looking at individuals in the Old Testament that are mostly of not necessarily the greatest people in the world, bad character individuals, but we're looking to see what good lessons can we draw from these individuals. And they aren't necessarily stories or individuals that are as well known, and hence the title of the class. The first lesson, we looked at Nabal. Last week, we looked at Hophni and Phinehas. And for those that have been here, you know that we, the way we've been approaching the class is we spend a little bit of time sharing some background or context before I introduce to you the subject of our lesson. I'm going to do a little bit different tonight. I'm going to give you the names of the individuals that we're going to look at, and it's a couple names tonight. Tonight we're going to look at Shemua, Shaphat, Egal, Paltai, Gadiel, Gadi, Amel, Sitha, Nabai, and Guel. Does anyone know who they are? I promise I did not just flip through and try to find the hardest names in the Old Testament to pronounce. Any ideas?
So they're bad.
They're bad. Bad unknown people. It's okay. I would have no idea either. So to figure it out, let's start at the beginning of the Bible. And when I say the beginning, I actually mean the beginning of the Bible. Like, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And we know from creation to Noah was how many generations? This is not the tricky part. No. From creation to Noah was how many generations? All right, David's here. From creation to Noah was how many generations?
Is it more than 24?
Less. Less. You can go to Genesis chapter 5 and count them, or David can just tell us. 10. Okay, 10. All right, if I took Noah plus 10 generations, who do we land on? You can find it in Genesis 11. Abraham. All right, so go to Genesis chapter 12. Open your Bibles to Genesis 12. So in Genesis 12, God says to Abraham, get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I'll make you a great nation. I'll bless you. I'll make your name great. And you shall be a blessing. I will bless you. Those who bless you, I will curse him who curses you. And you and all your family and the families of the earth shall be blessed. What are the three things that God has promised Abraham? All right, great Savior, great name, and a great land. And we learn a little bit more. Abraham's about 75 years old here. We learn a little bit more about this great land in verse 7. What do we learn about this great land? Who's getting this land? Huh? Not Abraham. Who's getting it? His descendants. All right, flip to chapter 15. Genesis 15, in verse 18, it says that the Lord made a covenant with Abraham. And he says, to your descendants I have given this land. And what do we learn about the land? It's big. Very big. What else do we learn about the land?
It's
full of a lot of other people. And so it's a big land full of other people. God actually calls out who's all there. And we learn something else about the time frame that they're going to get this land. Look up in verse 13. God says, I want you to know certainly this, that your descendants will first be what?
Strangers
in a land. And it's not going to be their land, and they're going to serve those whose land it is. What's that referring to?
Egypt.
And how long are they going to be servants in the land that's not theirs first?
400
years. Okay. Turn to Genesis. Let's go to Genesis 26. Genesis 26, verse 3. All right. So who's God talking to in Genesis 26? Is it Abraham?
Isaac.
All right. So God says to Isaac, dwell in this land. I will be with you, bless you. For you and your descendants, I will give all these lands, and I'll perform an oath which I swore to Abraham, your father. I'll make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I'll give your descendants all these lands, and in your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because Abraham obeyed my voice, and he kept my charge, my command, my statutes, my law. What is God saying to Isaac?
Same promise.
All right. Flip to chapter 28, verse 13. I am the Lord, your God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land of which you lie, I will give you and your descendants. All your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west, to the east, to the north, to the south. And in you and in your seed, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Who's he speaking to? Who's God speaking to here?
Jacob.
What's God telling him? Same promise. Okay. Go to Genesis 51. A couple of you got it. Genesis 50. Verse 24. This is Joseph on his deathbed, and he's reassuring his brothers. And he says, I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land. What's this land?
Egypt.
And which he swore to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob. He's going to bring you out of this land to the land of which he swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. All right, so now it's now the book of Exodus. You all know that Pharaoh arises, king arises that does not know, that did not know Joseph. And so in Exodus chapter 2, verse 24, it says, God heard their groaning. God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And then God appears before Moses in the burning bush in chapter 3. And this is what he says to Moses. In chapter 3, verse 7, it says, I've surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt. They've heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know of their sorrows. So I have come down to deliver them out of the hands of the Egyptians and to bring them from the land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to a place of the Canaanites, to the Hittites, the Amorites, to the Perizzites, the Hivites, and to the Jebusites. Flip over to Exodus, let's go to 13, no, 12, Exodus 12. Exodus 12, verse 40. So they've left Egypt, as you all know. Moses has led them out of Egypt. They're now in the wilderness. And what's verse 40 tell us? Okay, they're in the wilderness, and they had, the children of Israel, they had lived in Egypt for how long? Okay. So now, chapter 13. Moses tells the people. Verse 3, he tells the people. In verse 5, it shall be, when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with what? All right. Okay, so with all that context, who is Shemua, Shaphat, Igal, Paltai, Gadiel, Gadi, Amel, Setha, Nabai, and Guel? Any guesses now?
Have to be people of that land.
The 10 spies. All right, so flip to Numbers 13. All right, so you probably all know this story well. So that Numbers 13, they're finally there. They're on the brink of entering the promised land. And what does God tell Moses to do? We're going to send out spies. And he says in verse 2, I'm going to send out spies so we can figure out if we can go conquer this land. Is that what he says? What's verse 2 say? We're going to send out spies to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving you. Okay? And so he says to select an individual from each tribe. And so they do that. And then Moses gives them instructions. He says, this is how I want you to go spy out the land. And what are some of the things they're supposed to go and evaluate? If you look in verses, 17 through 20. What are some of the things they're supposed to go try to figure out about this land? Is the land good or bad? What else? All right, go look at the people who are dwelling there. What else? Yeah, are they strong or are they weak, the people there? Okay, what's the land like? What else? All right, let's go look at the cities. Are they like campgrounds or are they fortified? What else? What else are they supposed to go evaluate? I'm sorry?
Are there forests?
I think we, all right, so are they, what's the land like? Are the people strong or weak? Is the land good or bad? What are the cities like? To bring back some of the fruit of the land, okay? And so out they go. And so they go out to spy out the land. They bring back cluster of grapes, they bring back some figs, they bring back some pomegranates. And how long are these spies gone? Anyone know? 40 days. All right. It was either going to be 7 or 40. So you did a good, you did good with 40. All right. So they come back in 40 days. And so they gather everyone from the congregation together, the children of Israel, they all gather together. And they come back to give the report. They bring the grapes and the figs and the pomegranates, and they say, well, we went into the land that you sent us to spy in, and what's the first thing they say? Huh? Well, it really is good land. It flows with milk and honey. That's good. Here's the fruits. You know, it has good land. And then what do they say? The people that dwell in there are strong. The city, yeah, no camps. They're fortified. Fortified cities, and they're large. What else? Huh?
There's a bunch of people.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people. Hey, we ran into some people. The descendants of Anak, the Amalekites are in the south, the Hittites and Jebusites and Amorites are in the mountains, the Canaanites are along the sea and the banks of the Jordan. And so in verse 31, what's their conclusion? We can't go against these people. Why can't they go against them? They're stronger than us.
They're
giants. What do they say about the land? What was their conclusion about the land? It's going to devour the inhabitants. And the people were, they're stronger than us, and all the people they saw were what? Giants, greater in stature. And they were what compared to them?
Grasshoppers.
All right. It's kind of interesting the land was so bad when they brought back the fruit. Okay. What's the reaction of the people? The congregation hears this report. And what do? They cry out. They weep. What else? I'm sorry, I didn't. They grumble against Moses and Aaron. What else? Oh, yeah. What are we doing here? Why we even leave Egypt? What else? We should have. It would have been better off if we had stayed in Egypt. It would have been better off if we had died in the wilderness, right? What's going to happen to us now? We're going to go try to take this city, and what's going to happen to us? We're going to try to go into this promised land, and what's going to happen to us? We're going to get slaughtered, and then our families are going to be victims here. And so what do they decide to do? They're going to pick a new leader to take them back to Egypt. That's what they decided to do. Okay. What is Joshua and Caleb? What are their reports? It's a little bit different report. What's their report back?
Let's go do it.
All right. So what's their view on the land? It's good, right? So land we passed through and spied out is exceedingly good land. And what's their view on whether or not they can take the land?
They said we could take it.
Why can they take it? All right, so they say, if the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and what? Give it to us. The Lord will give it to us. And then they say, it's a land that flows with milk and honey. Honey, only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. What does that mean? They are our bread. We're going to eat them alive. Because why? Their protection is gone. Now, do they have some special protection around them? What does that mean? Their protection is gone. Did the people in the land, the Amalekites and the Hittites and the Amorites, they have some special protection? What did they mean when they said their protection is gone? Their time is up. Why is their time up? Was it that they had some protection, or was it that was it that the children of Israel had someone on their side?
Children of Israel had somebody on their side, God.
They had God on their side, right? And so the protection of those in the land was up. They were going to be their bread. The Lord is with us. Do not fear them. So they were ready. And so the children of Israel were like, you know what? I believe Joshua and Caleb. Let's go. That's what they said, right?
No.
What do? Let's just stone these two. Because we got to get our way back to Egypt. So listen to God's reaction to this. God says, how long will these people reject me? How long will they not believe me? With all the signs I have performed among them, I'm going to strike them, I'm going to disinherit them, I will make of you, he's talking to Moses, a nation greater and mightier than they. So Moses actually intercedes on their behalf, and God decides to pardon them. But of course, what's the punishment? What happens to the 10 spies? I'm sorry? What happens to the 10 spies? I'm sorry, I just can't hear it.
They die.
They die, right? They receive a plague and they die. What happens to the children of Israel, the adults? They wander in the wilderness. Do they get to go into the promised land? Okay, who gets to go into the promised land of this Joshua? Okay. All right. So, it's an interesting story, one I'm sure you've all studied before. I use the 10 names of the spies to rope it into this class. Cheated a little bit, but none of you knew who they were. What's the value of studying this story? Why do we look at it?
Because if you trust in God, you're going to win.
Okay. You trust in God, you're going to win.
You have to be careful which leaders you're following.
Okay. Careful what leaders you're following. Okay. A warning around disobedience.
God made a promise.
Do you find something comforting in how ambiguous and consistent and clear this story is? We looked at passages in Genesis 12, Genesis 15, Genesis 26, Genesis 28, Exodus 2, Exodus 13 and 14. I want you to think back to all those verses we read. What was the promise God made? I'm going to give you a land. Was it going to Abraham or was it going to his descendants? Pretty clear it was going to his descendants. What do we know about the land that he had promised? It was vast. Was it occupied or not occupied? Okay, it was occupied land. Who was it occupied by? Amalekites, Amorites, Jebusites. Okay. Pretty clear. Multiple times, right? Okay. What else did he tell us about the land in those verses, in some of those verses? It was good land. Why do we know it was good land? It was flowing with milk and honey. What else did he tell us about the time frame and when they were going to get that land? They weren't going to get it until 400 years that they spent in Egypt or in a foreign land where they were working for the people who own the land. So I want you to put yourselves in the mindset of the children of Israel for a moment. And you knew this story. You knew all these promises. And so now it's finally here. It's finally here, and it's been promised and promised and promised and promised and promised. And it was promised, and you know about the land, you know where the land is, you know that it is occupied, and you know God has promised it. And you've now spent your 400 years in Egypt, and you're now out, and you now know that it is time. And God is saying, just go spy it out, and I'm going to give it to you. And so they went and spied it out, and guess what? It was a great land. It was a vast land. It was flowing with milk and honey. And it was full of Amalekites, Amorites, Jebusites, and Hittites. And they came back, and was there anything that they saw in there that wasn't exactly what God had told them? And yet, 10 of them figured out an excuse to foul it all up. And you can look at that and say, why were they so silly? Why did they mess that up? That is so obvious. We only looked at 8 verses. I could have picked a lot more. But how did they mess that up? It was so obvious. And then I'd ask you to think about how obvious is the rest of the Bible? How clear is God about what he expects? How simple is it? And yet, how often can we take something and just kind of foul it up? The beauty of this story is the simplicity of God. How simple it was. It wasn't overly complicated. And you had 2 men who saw it pretty clear, who didn't let it get overly complicated. They came back and they said, it's a land full of milk and honey. It's a land full of Amalekites and Amorites and Jebusites. It's just kind of like what God had been telling us all this time. And they saw it kind of the same way David saw the Philistine. We can't go do it, but God has told us he'll let us do it. Remember the story of David and Goliath. The problem with the Israelite army, the reason they were paralyzed, was they saw a Philistine giant, and they were afraid that they couldn't go do it themselves. When David saw it, he saw a Philistine who was insulting God and who knew that when he had defeated bears and lions, that it was God who allowed him to do it. And so it was very easy for him to look at that and say, well, this Philistine is insulting God, and God's going to let me go do this. For Joshua and Caleb, they looked at this and said, this is exactly what God has said for Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph. And we've come out of Egypt, and Moses has told us and told us and told us. And it's exactly what we've been expecting and waiting for all along. And so it wasn't that confusing for them. But for 10 of them, they made it very confusing. And they made it so confusing that they confused the entire rest of the people. So much so that they were ready to discard Moses, discard Aaron, discard Joshua, and discard Caleb. And so the lesson for us is, do we do the same thing? Or the warning, I should say, for us is not to do the same thing. And I would love to take credit for figuring this out, but the Hebrew writer figured it out. If you flip over to Hebrews chapter 4, the Hebrews writer in Hebrews chapter 4 talked about the promise of peace. And when he's talking about the promise of peace, he's talking about not, he's saying don't, you know, there's this great promise, this great promise of rest. And you can obtain this great promise of rest if you embrace the gospel. And then he says, look, in chapter 4, verse 4, he talks about that God rested on the seventh day in heaven. And then he says in verse 5, and again in this place, they shall not enter my rest. And that verse is a reference to Psalms 95. And if you want to mark that down and go back and read it, Psalms 95 is a psalm about the children of Israel not being allowed to enter into the promised land because of their failure to, their failure to obey God. And then he says in verse 6, since therefore it remains, some must enter, and those of whom it must be preached did not enter because of disobedience. And the Hebrew writer is essentially saying, don't make the same mistake. The Israelites made the mistake of not obeying God, and because they didn't obey God, they didn't get to enter into rest. They didn't get to enter into the promised land. So don't make the same mistake when it comes to the gospel. Don't forgo the ability to enter into rest, to enter into heaven, because you're rejecting what God's offering. So to me, that's one of the big takeaways. That's what we get to learn from these 10 guys. They saw something that was pretty clear, and they somehow decided to put whatever doubts they had, to make whatever excuses that they wanted to make and circumvent what was pretty clear, what God had kind of told them. But there's other lessons. What are some of the other lessons?
God keeps his promises.
God keeps his promises. You can trust in him to do that.
Don't trust in your own means.
Don't trust in your own means. Don't trust in yourself. Yeah.
Be happy where you are.
Yeah, they were a tough group to keep happy. Yes, ma'am.
It doesn't pay to be stiff-necked.
I'm sorry?
It doesn't pay to be stiff-necked.
It doesn't pay to be stiff-necked. Yep. Yeah. What about Joshua and Caleb?
They got their reward.
They got their reward. Yeah.
Well, immediately before the world rejected you, they rejected
me. Yep. I want you to think about Joshua and Caleb for a second. What when God decides when He's talking about His how He's going to deal with the children of Israel? And he decides that he is not going, that Joshua and Caleb are going to be able to enter into the promised land. Why does he say that they get to enter into the promised land? He's talking about Caleb specifically, but it applies to both. What's he say? Why does he say Caleb gets to go in? I think it's like around verse 20, 23 or 24 of chapter 14. How does he describe Caleb? He followed. He wholly or completely followed God. Yep. The New King James has a phrase. What's it? What's the phrase? What's it say about him? It was a different spirit. How easy was it for Joshua and Caleb, after those 10 men gave their report and the entire congregation was behind them, for them to stand up and say something different? What's it mean? I mean, they had a different spirit. I think of 1 Peter chapter 2 that tells us to be holy. What's it mean to be holy? Be godly, be different. God says Caleb has a different spirit. What did they do? They stood up and they were different. They stood up and they acted holy. They were of a completely different mindset. And despite the fact that everyone else that they were with was presenting a different story. But they stood up and did what they thought was right. And I think that's a lesson for us. The last one before the second bell gets me that I was thinking about. Think about being the leader of these people. Abraham, Moses and Aaron. How would you like that job? How would you like the job of... Think about Moses having them tell him, like, hey, we want to get someone else to lead us, and we're going to go back to Egypt after you just let us out of Egypt and led us through the wilderness to finally get here to the promised land. We decided we're going to vote on someone else and have them take us back. And they told Moses that. We're going to go stone Joshua and Caleb. And they told him all that, and then he went and interceded on their behalf. And think about all the grumbling. We talked about it. Tracy brought it up, like all the grumbling he had dealt with for years and years and years and years with these people. I think it's a helpful lesson for us in terms of God has set up in his wisdom how we are to be organized and the kind of leaders that we have. And boy, let's not do that to ours. They have a tough job, and the last thing we should do is act like that. Because I don't know how Moses kept waking up every day to deal with that group. All right. Hope you found this helpful. We'll have our last class next week, and we'll probably venture a little bit into the New Testament, okay? All right. Thank you.